Step three of the 10 steps to success is clarify your vision and your values. Clarify your vision and your values. In order to set goals, which is going to be step four, you have to know what your priorities are. You have to know what's important to you. And we're talking about from the deepest place in your heart. Now, we have to know what our values are so we don't end up doing things that transgress ourselves. Because every time you act out of alignment with your values, it erodes your self-esteem. So it's important to be in integrity. But you got to know what your values are. One of the things I've noticed is some people would rather be confused about their values than decide. Because as long as I'm confused about them, what don't I have to do? Yeah, I don't have to take any action. Because I can say, well, I don't know. I don't know what I want to do. So I'll just stay confused. Confusion is a great way of avoiding responsibility. Confusion is also often the result of having what we call two foregrounds, which means that I've got two things that are equally prominent. Usually one's my should and the other one's my want to. And when I get really honest, my want to's are usually bigger than my shoulds. Is my value what I truly want, or is my value what I think I should do? And then I've got to let one fade away and one become what I do. Then I get out of confusion. A couple techniques for getting clear about your values. One is to make an I wants list. An I wants list. Probably the most powerful way is to get a friend. Two people sit opposite each other, and if Anita were my partner here, she would ask me over and over the question, what do you want? And then I would answer. And then she'd say, what do you want? And I would answer again. What do you want? And I would answer again. And we keep doing that for about 15 minutes. And usually the top stuff isn't that important. It's like, I want a Mercedes-Benz, I want a big house on the ocean, whatever. And by the end, we're getting down to, I want people to love me, I want to be free, I want to express myself, I want to make a difference, I want to feel powerful. Things that are more like expressions of me. And it's okay to want a Mercedes-Benz and a house on the ocean and all of that. And you can probably get it if you use these techniques. But make sure that what you end up getting in life is what you really want. I mean, how many times have we seen movie stars that seem to have everything they want and then they commit suicide because they're unhappy? You know, they seem like they have it all. I had a guy in a workshop who was making $350,000 a year as an anesthesiologist. And when he got right down to it, what he really loved to do was work on cars. He wanted to be a mechanic. But he knew his mother wouldn't approve. So he ended up working on bodies instead, just putting them to sleep. And I said, look, at least give yourself permission to buy a bunch of cars and work on them on the weekends. But see, his values and what he wanted didn't match his picture of who he thought he should be. So you've got to get really clear what you want. Another technique that I recommend very strongly is getting in touch with what I call your purpose or your mission. Now, there are two ways to do that I'll share with you. One is a meditative process. Find some very mellow, what's often called New Age or relaxing music, just very mellow background music. And then what you do is you take a little journey inside, and you go up a mountain, and on the top of a mountain there's a temple. And inside that temple you meet a wise and loving being, like a guardian angel. And this angel gives you a box, and in the box is a symbol, a gift, that symbolizes your life's purpose. And people that are visually oriented, this is a powerful technique. I've had people say they got a book because they realized they're supposed to be a writer. They got a heart because they were supposed to be loving. They got a sword because they needed to be more disciplined. I have a friend whose life purpose is to represent discipline to other people. Every day, whether it's raining, snowing, he gets up, he runs 6 miles, and he meditates for an hour. I don't care where he is or what's going on. An amazing man. My life purpose is empowering people to live their highest vision in a context of love and joy. And when I'm doing that, I feel great. When I'm not doing that, I feel like I'm not doing me. So it's important to get in touch with that purpose. The other way to get in touch with your purpose is more of a mental process. And I learned this from a man named Arnold Patton, who wrote a book called You Can Have It All. I was attracted to that title. And the way he teaches people to get in touch with their purpose is to answer a set of questions, which I'm going to tell you what they are. And you can answer these mentally to yourself, or you can write them down. The first stage is to ask the question, what are two unique personal qualities that I have? Two unique personal qualities that are really kind of essentially uniquely me. So the answer might be something like enthusiasm and creativity. The next question is to list one or two ways you enjoy expressing those qualities when interacting with others, such as support and to inspire. So I express those qualities by supporting people or inspiring people. And then the next step is to assume the world is perfect in your vision. What would the perfect world look like? What would people be doing? Just the way you'd like it to be. Just the way you'd hope for it in your ideal fantasy. And you describe that in your mind. People are loving each other. People are going for their goals. Whatever it is for you. And how is everyone interacting with everyone else? Critical part of that. So you describe that in a sentence or two. And then the last stage is to combine those three prior statements into one statement. I'll give you an example. Using my love and joy to inspire and empower people to live their highest vision. So I use my love and my joy, those are the two qualities, to inspire and empower, those are the two action words, people to live their highest vision. Because my ideal state of the world is if everyone was doing what in their heart they really want to do, I believe the world would work. Because I believe that each of us is like cells in a body. And if kidney cells are doing what kidney cells do, and brain cells are doing what brain cells do, and red corpuscles are doing what red corpuscles do, then the whole body works. See? And that each part of us is like a cell in the body of the greater world.
One of the most powerful things you can do for yourself is to get in touch with what I call your life purpose. And there's two reasons it really builds our self-esteem. One is you begin to realize you're not some aggregate collection of undirected DNA molecules that just happen to get born onto the earth, but that you have a function, a purpose, a reason for being here. And it's usually a very grand reason. When I ask people in our seminars to do our life purpose exercise, the kind of things they get in touch with are, you know, to share love, to spread peace, to help people realize their dreams, to help children feel powerful. And if I feel that who I am and my purpose for being here is grand and large and makes a difference, then I get to feel good about myself. The other reason it's important to be in touch with your life purpose is if I'm doing what I'm here to do, I feel good. And if you're not doing your purpose, you're going to be dissatisfied. It's like you went to Miami for a vacation and yet you spent the whole time in a bookstore. You know, and then you got home and you realize you weren't rested because you didn't do what you went to do. And you get sidetracked. And we get sidetracked out of our need to make a living and out of our need for approval and out of our need to feel important. The thing is that when you're in that space of I'm not meaningful and my life doesn't amount to anything and I don't know who I am or what I am, a lot of people get very depressed. The key is at that point to realize that the level of self-talk you're engaging in to make yourself crazy at that moment in time is exactly the level that purpose doesn't come from. Purpose comes from a higher, or we could say a deeper place. It comes from the high self. And so all this, I'm not okay, is mental chit-chat. And so in order to get in touch with my purpose, I have to go to a different level. I've either got to do it through meditation, through prayer, or through a very high level of thinking, like the questions we talked about in terms of life purpose, you know, Arnold Patton's questions. And then I can get in touch with it. If someone's not in touch with their life purpose, and they want to be, then they need to make that a goal, okay? And you don't always get it instantly. If you can't get in touch with your purpose, pretend you've got one, and then what happens is the pretending is informed by that deeper part of yourself. See, because when you're dreaming and asleep, you're integrating all those thoughts. And then when you make it up, it's made up from a deep place inside yourself. But the key really is to put yourself in a deeper space of consciousness through things like meditation, concentration, and prayer. And then you can get in touch with that purpose.
One of the things that often comes up when we get into this is, I don't think I could make a living doing what I love to do. I mean, what I love to do is hang out with people. See? Well, Oprah Winfrey makes a living hanging out with people. My friend Diane Brousey, who's a tour director, makes a living hanging out with people. They just do it on a bus all over the world. And she gets paid for that. See? There was one woman, I don't know if you remember this, what she loved to do was watch soap operas. Yeah. And she said, now how the heck can I make a living watching soap operas? What she discovered was that a lot of people loved soap operas, but some people had to go to work. And so what she created was a little magazine called the Soap Opera Digest. And every week she would watch all the soap operas and she would catalog what went on and she would write up little summaries. So if you missed your soap opera that week, you'd know that Mary finally did get divorced from John and decided not to sleep with Ellis and went off to college and, you know, on and on it went. So when you came back, you'd be caught up. Now she makes a fortune out of watching and publishing information about soap operas. See, so it's possible to have what you want doing what you love to do, but you got to be willing to risk it. The last thing I'd like to share with you is something I call the vision exercise, which I learned from a man named Martin Root. Martin's from Toronto, Canada, and runs a company called the 100 Group, and stands for 100%, living your life 100%. And what he had us do, and this was very powerful for me, and again, all you have to do is put on some relaxing music, and then you can write down what I'm about to tell you, and then you can have someone read it to you, or you can put it on the cassette tape yourself, and then play it back. What you do is you close your eyes, and you visualize your life exactly the way you'd like it to be in the following areas. What would your home look like? Where would you live? What would the furniture be like? Who would live in that house with you? What kind of view would you have? How would it be painted? What kind of carpeting, artwork, whatever, the ideal. And at this stage, you don't worry about how. You don't say, well, I can't live in New Trier, or I can't live in Malibu because I don't make that kind of money. Forget that. See, we're going to tell you how your mind will solve that problem. First, you have to be honest with yourself what it is you want. Then career. What would you like to be doing career-wise? Who would you be working with? Where would you be working? What would you be doing? What kind of clients would you have? What would your financial situation be like? How much money? How much in savings? How much income? Family and friends. How would your relationship be with your family? How many people would be in your family? What would be the quality of your relationships with friends? Who would be there? What would it feel like? Romantic relationships. Intimacy. Caring. Touching. What would that look like? Your body and your physical health. What would that look like in your life? Emotional and spiritual life. Would you be free and open, relaxed, perseverant, in an ecstatic state of bliss all day long? What would it look like? Community and community service. If you were living in the ideal community, what would be going on? See, I live in L.A., and in my ideal community, there'd be no drive-by gang shootings. So I would see a peaceful community that's clean, and the kids are in school, and people are getting along, and there's boys' clubs after school, and kids are involved in youth leagues and so forth. And then finally, what would the world look like? Would it be at peace? Would it be at war? Would the ozone layer be closed up? You know, what would it look like? And then to write that down. And then the next step, and this is scary for most people, is to share that vision with somebody. At that point, most people go, no, I can't share that. It's too weird. It's too crazy. People will think I'm flaky, you know, whatever it is. But when I go into corporations and work with high-level executives, and I get them to write down their vision, and then I tell them to share it, they balk. Then I get them into small groups, and they share it, and afterwards I say, how'd it feel to share it? And they all go, wow, half the guys in the room want the same thing I want. I thought I was the only one. See, we all want pretty much the same thing, but we never admit it because we think we're the only one. When we're all in the same boat, when we talk about it, we discover we all pretty much want the same things for our life. Okay, step four, set goals and objectives and make a plan. Set goals and objectives and make a plan. One of the stories that illustrates how powerful goals can be in terms of motivating you to success is about a little boy in 1957. He was about 10 years old, and he set a goal. And at that time in his life, Jim Brown was the greatest running back in the history of football, and this young little boy decided that Jim was his idol. And so he had in his room, he had posters on the wall of Jim Brown, and, you know, articles that he'd cut out of magazines and pictures he put on the wall. And he decided one day that he wanted to see Jim Brown if possible, and he realized there was a football game coming up in California near where he lived. And he decided he would go to the game and see if he could get Jim Brown's autograph. And he goes to the game, and he couldn't get in because he was very, very poor. He didn't have any money. In fact, he was so poor, he had splints on his legs because he was suffering from a disease called rickets, and which was a result of malnutrition. And what happened was he couldn't get in the game, but at the end of the game, the players were coming off the field and, you know, out into the parking lot and so forth. He asked Jim Brown for his autograph. He said, Mr. Brown, said, you're my hero, you're my idol. I look up to you. I want to be like you when I grow up. I just want you to know you really mean a lot to me. Can I get your autograph? And he says, sure, kid, I'll give you an autograph. So he writes his name and gives it to the kid. And Jim Brown starts to walk away, and this little kid says, oh, one more thing, sir, one more thing. I just wanted you to know when I grow up, I'm going to break every record you hold. And Jim Brown stops, and he looks back, and he says, what's your name, kid? He says, my name's Orenthal James, sir, but my friends call me O.J. It's a true story of O.J. Simpson. When he was a little kid, he set that goal. And years later, he went on to break every record that Jim Brown held but three.
Then he was sidelined by an injury. He's a famous person. He went on to play pro ball, and he became a sports announcer, and it's on HBO and a series. And so it's amazing what happens once you set a goal and you really believe in it and you really intend it. Miracles happen. But without a goal, then life can be directionless.
You've got to have a dream. So you've got to take this vision, then you have to make a goal. And a goal is something that's measurable, that says, I'm going to break your records by the time I'm 31 years old or whatever. I'm going to own a 4,000 square foot house on Pacific Coast Highway overlooking the Pacific Ocean by June 1st, 3 p.m., 1995. See, it's specific, it's measurable. One of the worst things I've seen people do, those of you that are parents, is squelch a kid's dreams. I have a friend named Monty Roberts. Monty lives in Santa Ynez, and he's got a big horse ranch. He raises thoroughbreds, and he sells probably $6 million worth of horses a year. And when Monty was a little kid, he was in school, and he was asked by his teacher to write a paper about what he wanted to be when he grew up. And Monty wrote down he wanted to be a rancher, and he drew a picture of the ranch, and he drew a picture of the house, and he handed in the paper. Now, you have to realize, at that point, Monty was the son of an itinerant horse trainer. They'd go from stable to stable following the racing season, and he had no house. He lived out of a trailer with his father. When a teacher got the paper, he put an F on it, and he gave it back, and he said, see me after class. And when Monty saw the teacher after class, he said, what's the deal? He said, son, you have to realize you're the son of an itinerant horse trainer. There's no way you can ever grow up and become a rancher and own your own ranch. It's impossible. Forget it. He said, rewrite the paper more realistically, and I'll give you a new grade. Monty went home, and he talked to his dad. He says, Dad, what should I do? What should I do? His dad, very wise man, said, son, you have to look inside your heart and do what you feel is right. Monty struggled with this for over a week. Then he handed the paper back in, and he took the F. And he said to the teacher, give me an F, because this is my dream. Now, I've been on Monty's ranch. It's 200 of the finest acres you'll ever see. It's got a 4,000 square foot house. It's huge. I've been in it. It's the exact floor plan he drew when he was a junior or senior in high school. And he tells the story that about two summers ago, the teacher that gave him that F brought 30 kids in a school bus, and they camped on his ranch for the summer. And the teacher finally apologized and said, thank God you had enough courage not to listen to me and to go for your dream. This organization that I mentioned that I belonged to earlier, called the Inside Edge, people go there with the most outlandish ideas, and everyone says, go for it. You can do it. I know at least 8 or 9 books that have been written by people there, people that never thought they could write a book, people that have done cassette albums, that have started seminars, that have ended hunger in certain areas of Los Angeles because they were committed, people that have started their own businesses, people that have traveled to Russia and back as citizen diplomats. Very powerful when you have a vision and a goal and you get support. In 1953, they did a study at Yale University. They asked all the seniors, this is amazing, they asked all the seniors to write down whether or not they had a goal and whether or not they had a plan to achieve that goal. It was part of a larger questionnaire. 1973, 20 years later, they contacted all of the remaining surviving members of that class and asked them, had they achieved their goals and how much money did they make and so on and so forth. Only 3% of the people in that original class in 1953 had a goal and a strategy for how to achieve that goal. In 1973, those same 3%, their combined financial net worth was larger than the rest of the 97% of the class combined. The power of knowing what you want. The power of being committed to it. There's an old saw that says if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. And there's another one I heard recently that says if you don't have plans, you'll end up working for someone who does. So you want to make sure that you create a goal for yourself out of your vision, out of your values. Now, let's talk about how to set a goal so it'll work. Goal has to have several guidelines. The first one says it's conceivable, which means you can think it up in your mind, that it's conceptually possible. The second one says it's believable. You have to believe you can do it. Like for me to set a goal that I'll run a mile in less than 4 minutes by next Friday is not believable, because I know I'm not in that good a shape. So I wouldn't set a goal like that. But I might set a goal to run a sub 4 minute mile in 3 years. And with today's technology and sports psychology and other things, I might be able to possibly do that. The next guideline, the third one, says it must be achievable. Again, I wouldn't set a goal to run a marathon in 2.5 hours if I was a wheelchair paraplegic. I might set a goal to finish the marathon, but it would take me a lot longer than that. So it's got to be achievable. Then it says measurable. How much and by when? And measurable means that someone else can measure it just like me. Like 4,000 square feet on Pacific Coast Highway, Jim can come over and take out his tape measure and measure 4,000 square feet. It either is or it isn't. Okay. Five, it says stated with no alternative. So I don't say I'm either going to live in Malibu or Beverly Hills, because then my unconscious doesn't know whether to move east or to move west. If I'm in Santa Monica in L.A., I've got to decide. Pick one. Otherwise, you don't mobilize the energy with the goal. It's got to be something you want to do, not a goal for somebody else, what you want to do, or it won't motivate you. It's got to be controllable. And what we mean by that is that I'm not setting goals for other people, I'm setting a goal for myself. So I don't say I'm going to take Ann to dinner, because Ann might say no. But if I say I'm going to invite Ann to dinner, then she might say yes, or she might say no, but at least I invited her. Okay? So make your goals things you have control over. And finally, it needs to be a goal that doesn't hurt anyone else. Like, I was working with some kids in a youth group, because I think it's important that we work with these kids, and a lot of the kids are at risk. And this one kid said, I'm going to break off 14 car antennas on the way home. That's measurable, conceivable, believable, achievable, and all that. But it would have got him in trouble and would have hurt other people's cars. So it's got to be something that doesn't hurt other people. Now, once you've got a goal, or several goals, you must write them down. A friend of mine says, as soon as you think it, ink it. Okay. Also says delegate it to document. In other words, you got to have the goal written down. Something about writing it down locks it into the unconscious in a way that it's not written down. And it's best if you can write it down in a place where you'll see it again. And then tell other people about your goals. Now, most people, when I ask them to do this in a seminar, go, Mr. Kinfield, I can't do that. Why not? I'll be embarrassed. People will think I should already have achieved that goal. I don't want people to know I'm doing that. Or what if I don't reach it? Then everyone will know. Or I'll be accountable. If everyone knows, I'll have to do it. People will think I'm flaky for having that kind of goal. Or it's too big. Or I don't want my boss to know my goal is to retire and have a ranch, you know, because he'll think I'm not committed to the company. But the fact is, if other people know your goals, what can they do? They can support you with them. Any goal worth having is probably not achievable by yourself. You have to enroll other people. The big visions, like when John F. Kennedy said, we're going to put a man on the moon by 1970. We got there by 1968. He enrolled a whole country in that vision because he wrote it down. He put it in a document. He wrote proposals. He gave speeches. He got people involved in the vision. You've got to have your goal clear. In L.A., in the land of movie land, if you want to do a movie, you have to write a proposal so complete that the movie's almost shot. And it might take 3 years to produce a proposal. And then you got to go and see if you can get Robert Redford to play the part. And will this guy be your producer? And this guy be your cameraman? And who's going to do the funding? And where's it going to be shot? And what's the script? It's almost like it's done before you can get a person to pay a penny for it. But once it's that level, it'll probably happen. Because it's clear, it's measurable, it's specific. People know about it, it's documented, and they can get motivated behind it. Let me tell you why it's important that your goals be specific. You may remember when the Chrysler Corporation got into trouble and Lee Iacocca came in and took over and got it back on his feet. Well, there was a guy in Detroit had a car dealership and it went under, went bankrupt. What happened was his wife left him and said, look, if you can't make a living like I'm used to, I'm splitting. His kids left. They went with his wife. So now he's out of a company, doesn't have a job, lost his family, sorely depressed. Decides he's going to move to California and start over. Moves out to Santa Monica near where I live. Can't get a job at first. Finally gets a job selling Fords. He's not real happy. It's not the car he loves. It's not his own company. One day he decides to commit suicide. Goes down to the Santa Monica Pier. If you've ever been there, you walk out at the end of the pier. You look down. It's about 100 feet down. And he decides he's going to dive headfirst into the sand, break his neck, kill himself. As he's about to jump, he notices this bottle floating in on the water. And he gets curious. It's just out there floating and the sun's shining off it. And somehow, it just grabs his attention. So he climbs down the ladder at the end of the Santa Monica Pier, wades out into the water. Now he's got water up to his waist. He pulls this bottle out, comes back into the shore, pulls the cork out, and out pops a genie. And he says, wait a second. I know I'm in California. This is absurd. I've been a genie. Give me a break. He says, no, I'm a genie, and I can grant you one wish, but make it carefully. He says, oh, I know exactly what I want. He says, what's that? He says, I want to wake up tomorrow morning, and I want to be the owner of a foreign car dealership in a major metropolitan area. He says, no problem. Snapped his fingers, and next morning the guy wakes up in Tokyo with a Chrysler dealership. Now, he said, I think I should have been more specific. Okay? He was thinking Mercedes-Benz, Detroit, or New York. So make sure you're very specific when you set your goals. Okay. Once you have this goal and you've stated it and you've written it down, one other thing about goals I just want to say before we go to the next step, and that is that you keep your agreements. See, every agreement is like a goal. And when you don't keep the agreement, who are all agreements really with anyway? Yourself. So if I say I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then I roll over and I hit the snooze alarm 7 times, the next thing I know it's 7:30, what does myself believe about myself? Yeah, that I can't trust me, that I don't do what I intend to, I don't do what I say I'm going to do. So when I set a goal, the key thing is to be committed to that goal. I'm going to take the attitude of what I call no matter what. Whatever it takes, I'm going to do that goal. Now, many of us have more than one goal in life, right? So one of the things you have to do is prioritize your goals. What's most important? Every day, write down everything to do. And then prioritize them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Start working on number one, and don't work on number two until number one is finished. When you're done with one, go to two. When you're done with two, go to three. Because if there's only so many things you can do, why not make the most important ones complete? So make sure you prioritize your goals. Decide what they are. Write them down, make sure they're measurable, and be specific.